Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Fighting on Film podcast, the podcast all about classic and obscure war movies, from the Normandy landings to the days of chivalry and swords. If it's been captured on film, we're going to try and cover it. I'm Robbie of RM Military History.
I'm Matthew Moss of Historical Firearms and the Armourer's Bench. Hello there, sorry to interrupt. I wanted to let you know that you can now join our supporting cast over on Patreon. As thanks for your support, you'll be able to help us pick films, submit questions for guests, have first pick on brand new and exclusive merch, and much more. Thank you for your support. Now back to the show.
Hello, welcome back to Fighting on Film. Now, after last week's 150th celebration episode, we reviewed The Guns and Averone. We're coming right up to date this week with The Great Escaper, the new Michael Caine movie about Bernie Jordan and his great escape over the channel for the 70th anniversary D-Day commemorations. And a big thanks to Pathé for an advanced screening of the movie. Thanks very much. We love reviewing new movies for you at on Fighting on Film. And if you want to go and see this one, it's in cinemas on October the 6th. So if you're listening at the on the date of release, that's 2 days. So make your plans, book your tickets, get your popcorn, and go and have a watch. So this episode's going to be a little bit different. We're not going to do the alley-tally. We're not going to do favourite scenes as per se. We're going to have more of sort of a loose chat about the movie, and then we'll move into spoiler territory. Not that there's any real hard spoilers in this one. It's not that kind of film, but we don't want to ruin it for you. So there will be a definite marker when the spoilers come. So when you hear the Al Murray eye dent, if you know what that sounds like, you'll know the spoilers are coming.
The klaxon. The spoiler klaxon.
Yeah. So before we begin this episode and our chatting about the movie, we asked you guys over on Twitter at Fighting on Film, please do follow us if you haven't before, what are some of your favourite Michael Caine and Glenda Jackson films? So we had Ian McLennan went with The Eagle Has Landed, and Mary Queen of Scots, our very own Matthew Moss, Historical Firearms, went with The Ipcress File and Header. Simon Massey
It's hard picking.
I know. It's like the Caine and Glenda Jackson have had such illustrious careers. It's so difficult.
Both two-time Oscar winners. Come on.
Exactly. I mean, these are heavyweights, absolute heavyweights. Now, that's something about the film we'll talk about in a minute, the casting. Then we had Simon Massey, who goes with Caine, you know, Zulu, The Man Who Would Be King, Bridge Too Far, Hill in Korea. Caine's such a legend, and he said he's looking forward to watching it. Kevin Getz goes with Caine in A Bridge Too Far, and Glenda Jackson for her appearance on The Muppet Show, which I liked.
It's so interesting. So throughout all of these, like, American listeners have gone with like their appearances on The Muppet Show, and then a lot of UK listeners have gone with the classic Morecambe and Wise sketch on their Christmas show she did.
Yes.
Which is great, actually. It's very good.
So, and speaking of the Morecambe and Wise sketch there, Bedford Enthusiast Club goes with The Italian Job for Caine, And for Glenda Jackson, Cleopatra, Ernie Wise adaptation.
Quite a few.
There's quite a few. Yeah. Barry Grogan goes with Alfie or Palmer. I went with Get Carter. You know, can't go wrong with Get Carter. What a great noir film. Sophisticat's review goes with Ipcress File for Kane and Morecambe and Wise for Glenda Jackson. Stephen Maturin goes with Bridge Too Far and King Lear. And Richard Bruce's week will round it out with Zulu for Kane. Isn't it? Kane and Jackson, what can you say? Like two, you know, as I said, heavyweights, powerhouses of their day. You know, Kane's 90, Jackson was 89 at the time of recording. And,
yeah,
you know, I think probably going to cast, Matt, we might as well, we're talking about them. But apparently Kane is going to retire after this one.
He said that at the premiere, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
He said he's struggling to walk.
That's it. Yeah, he was out of wheelchair at the press release screening that we couldn't make, unfortunately. It would have been lovely to have seen him in the flesh.
Yeah, we were offered an invite, weren't we? But
yeah,
yeah,
timing and everything there, else, you know what it's like.
Within the same day.
Mm.
So in terms of cast, we've got Michael Caine playing Benny Jordan. And just to round out Michael Caine's copious... You know, war movie.
You could do an entire episode on Kane, couldn't you, really?
Oh, I'm sure we will eventually when we start doing actor profiles and stuff like that. Hill in Korea, The Steel Bayonet, apparently. Car Burning with Pride, Foxhole in Cairo, Zulu, Ipcress File, Play Dirty, Battle of Britain, Too Late the Hero, Last Valley, The Man Who Will Be King, The Eagle Has Landed, A Bridge Too Far, Escape to Victory. And that cameo recently in 2017's Dunkirk. There, you know, it's a co-billing, really, isn't it, between Kane and Jackson?
Yeah.
And it's a strong cast. There's the supporting cast are great too, but in terms of Jackson, you know, notable roles: Mary Queen of Scots, Women in Love, Bequest to the Nation, A Touch of Class, Hedda, just. She had an incredible career for like 3 decades and then went away and became a politician.
Yeah.
For 20 odd years. And then I think it was 2019, she came back to acting and did a few pieces. And then this is her last motion picture.
Yeah.
You know,
last credit.
Yeah. And she's great in it. She is great in it. I will
fantastic.
Say this now. Yeah. They are both on form in this.
Very much so. Very much so.
I went into it with a little bit of trepidation around. Will they be able to carry this? Will this be as entertaining as, you know, we'd hope?
Yes.
But I think in terms of, you know, performances, Jackson especially, like some of the scenes that she has with Adele. Played by Danielle Vitalis, are great. They're really lovely,
fantastic.
And
yeah.
all of the scenes with Kane, with them together, there's a real chemistry. You can feel
very
it.
Very much. You think they're married. Like it's so nice, and it's very natural. And yeah, as I say, it's two people who have, you know, had a life in entertainment, a life in acting on the screen, and everything you've known them for and seen them in. It's very fitting. If it is Kane's last, and if it is, obviously it was Jackson's last. Unfortunately, she passed away before the movie came out. But
a couple of weeks before the first test screening.
That's it, yeah.
Away, sadly.
If it's their last films, so if it's Kane's last hurrah, then it's a very fitting end to undoubtedly one of the most, you know, packed careers that any actor's ever, a British actor's ever had.
You know, one of Britain's finest, you know, screen actors.
Oh, without doubt, yeah. You know, you can, I was watching his acting. There's a thing about screen acting that he did in 1987 that I hadn't seen before. And even then, you know, the guy is nearly 50 years, 40 years into a career there. You know, he's done more than some actors will ever do in a career. Even then, second Oscar. And it's just, the man is just a consummate professional. He knows, gets acting, understands what he's doing. And everything up to this movie, it's just yet again showcasing why Kane is so loved and revered. You know, he might have become a bit of a parody in his later life, with all the imitations that we've had over the years and all the sort of Caine-isms that have come out, you know, like blow the bloody doors off, my name's Michael Caine, etc. But I think it's easy to sort of forget the actual person himself, the actor, so consummate, and Jackson as well. I think it's such a nice send-off for them, this movie.
I agree, and I'm sure we'll talk about that more in a moment.
Sure.
Continuing with cast, we've got Adele, played by Danielle Vitalis. She made her debut in Attack the Block in 2011. She's been in Horrible Histories and Black Mirror, a number of other TV credits.
I was in that, Horrible Histories.
You were? You weren't in the one in 2019, were you?
No, I wasn't, no.
A bit earlier. No.
They wanted to get the old gang back together, but, you know, my rider's just insane, so, you know. I'm only joking.
Then we've got Victor O'Shin as Scott Selwood, who plays a veteran, an Afghanistan veteran.
Yep.
He's been in Casualty, the TV series Black Ops, and next year he's going to be appearing in the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, the new Shane Ritchie picture.
You mean Guy Ritchie?
Guy Ritchie, not Shane Ritchie. That's a very different film.
That's staying in.
Moving swiftly on. Young Ben is played by Will Fletcher. He was in a 2021 film called The Road Dance. He was also in the recent Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power TV series. And he was also in that period drama on ITV, I think it was, Tom Jones. Then we've got Laura Marcus playing Young Rini. She's been in Silent Witness, Bad Education, and also been in Tom Jones. So they knew each other prior.
That's nice.
We had a little bit of a standout performance from John Standing as Arthur, the RAF officer that
that
Bernie meets when he gets over to France. And he plays a fairly complex character with a lot of survivor guilt. And that's a theme that is, you know, throughout the film. And we'll talk
very
about
cool
that in a moment as well.
The movie. Yeah.
And you'll recognize John Standing from also being in The Eagle Has Landed with Caine in 1976 as Father Barraca. He was in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy in 79. He was in The Sea Orbs in 1980. Privates on Parade in 83. The Falklands Play in 2002.
That's
Gathering
great,
Storm.
Yes.
Yeah, it was. The Gathering Storm in the same year, and V for Vendetta in 2005.
Oh, wow.
Cherry-picked. Insane career.
Stipulation of Caine that he would do the movie if Standing was in it too, because they're old friends. So, and you can see the chemistry again.
That's
something we'll probably come back to, but as we say, the casting is very strong because everyone either knows each other or has worked previously. So the chemistry is very, very good.
Yeah. And just to illustrate that, to round it out, we have Wolf Carla as Heinrich, who is playing a German veteran that Bernie encounters. And, you know, he was also in The Eagle Has Landed in 76. Force 10 from Navarone, The Riddle of the Sands, The Lady Vanishes, Sea Wolves again, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Firefox, The Keep, Dirty Dozen, Next Mission, Dirty Dozen, The Deadly Mission.
Yes, classic films there, Dirty Dozen 3 and 4, yeah.
An episode or two of Soldier, Band of Brothers in 2001, and The Lost Battalion, which is a film that we need to cover.
Yeah, I love that film. Great film. Yeah.
And what an interesting, you know, character for him to pop up in. Mm. You know, is playing a German veteran after spending, you know, arguably a career playing German officers in movies.
Yeah.
It's quite fitting,
an
interesting little nod.
Yeah, it is fitting.
Definitely fitting.
Yes.
And that basically rounds out cast.
The cast, yeah. As we said, Pat, strong cast.
Yeah.
You couldn't lumber better, really, could you?
Mm.
So for production this week, directed by Oliver Parker. You might know him from you might know him for directing 1995's Othello. Any Key Stage 3 English literature people out there will know that one. It's a good film. Johnny English Reborn, the 2014 Dad's Army remake. We won't hold that against him. It's not the strongest. Swimming with Men with Rob Brydon. And Daniel Mays, that's a very good film, very good feel-good British comedy there. William Ivory wrote the film. He wrote Burton and Taylor, Made in Dagenham, Common as Muck in the 90s. And Ivory said this when he first looked at the story. It was that classic thing of saying, there's a wonderful incident there, but what is the story? The more I dug into it, the more I started to realise that it's a piece about redemption and forgiveness. It's about humanity in all shapes and guises, which I thought was a lovely quote. Then we have Christopher Ross, who's the DOP. He previously worked with Parker on the Dad's Army remake, and Danny Boyle's Yesterday, that one about the fella wakes up and the Beatles aren't around. Steals their songs. Yeah. So it could have been better, that movie, but, you know, it's fine. So it was based off a graphic novel, I think. I think it was.
Do you think it was as well?
Tangent off a minute. If you learn that Oasis and the Beatles had never existed, because I've seen the movie, there ain't no way I'd be like coming out and saying that it wasn't my work. I'd riff off that for my life.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah, no, he doesn't. At the end, he like gives all the music away to everyone because he feels like a fraud. But if it was me, in my greedy little brain, I would be like, I'm going to make an Oasis Greatest Hits and Beatles Greatest Hits album and be a billion gajillionaire.
Isn't it surreal that there would have been no Oasis without the Beatles?
I know, I love it. But that, in the film, that's why he goes, oh, there must be no Oasis either. And everyone goes, oh, who are they?
Did Blair get a mention?
I don't know. Wild tangents this week. Christopher Ross also directed the...
I do hope there's an exec at Pathé UK that enjoys this show.
Thank you, Pathé. We love you, Pathé. And he also did the director of photography on the Cats film, which was very interesting a few years ago, if you remember that one.
Yeah. It's a real shame that we're a war movie podcast, because reviewing Cats will be an experience, that's for sure.
Amazing, yeah. And there's like a bit of a war in that. We might be able to fit it in.
Is there? Know. I've never seen it.
It was a war on the eyes from the trailer. Distributed by Pathé and BBC Films. Military advisor was Paul Biddis, who's worked on The Crown, 1917. He's currently has just worked on the Malaysian movie about the Black Hawk Down kind of what was going on behind the scenes during that operation, called Malbat Missy Backer. Seen some great behind the scenes stuff on his socials. Do check out Paul's Instagram, actually. It's very interesting to see what he's working on. And the upcoming Gladiator 2 movie and the Napoleon film is coming out on Apple TV. And I contacted Paul. We did an interview together on a YouTube channel a few months ago. And he told me this about working on the movie. He said, I felt very privileged to have been asked to work on the show and for my research. I called up actress Vicky McClure, who listeners might know from Line of Duty and This Is England, to ask her granddad, Ralph McClure, who was a Royal Navy signaller on a landing craft tank on Sword Beach. So I had first-hand account of drills for the scenes. And I think as we talk about the movie in a little bit more depth in a minute, those scenes on the LCT, the flashbacks, are very well done. Very, very well done.
Yeah, they're one of the highlights of the film.
Yes, and there's some photos that Paul shared with me from working on the movie, behind-the-scenes shots that I'll be sharing on the socials this week. Do look out for those, because the mock-up of the LCT with the blue screen behind it, what they got, very, very good. The Imperial War Museum helped out, I think, with some of that. And as I said, the LCT was mocked up. Filming locations, it was filmed all in the UK, because I think it was filmed during COVID. So there was a lot of restrictions and things. So Twickenham, Camber Sands, Dover and Hastings were principal locations. And then I just got a bit from the lovely press release that Pathé sent us when they sent us a screener. And there's bits about the real story. So I'll read directly from the production notes. When the 70th D-Day celebrations in Normandy were first publicised, the staff at Burnley's care home had already attempted to get him on the trip with the Royal British Legion. However, they failed to secure him a place. Burnley therefore decided to make his own way there. Bravery over planning, Ivory said of Burnie. In truth, Burnie did not have to escape from their care home because he was free to come and go as he pleased. It was only Reenie that required full-time care. But it was true that Burnie kept his plan secret from the care home staff because he didn't want anyone to try and stop him. We assume that Burnie would not have disappeared without telling his wife of 59 years, and we assume that she agreed to keep his plan secret for as long as possible. It is also true that Burnie was entirely ignorant of the fact that his escapade had made headlines throughout the world following the police issuing a tweet about him having gone missing. Hashtag the great escaper. He was quite taken back by the furore when he got back to England to find reporters besieging his care home.
I remember it at the time. I remember it being on the news and stuff, and it being a you know, an interesting little footnote to, you know, such an important commemoration.
Yeah.
And I think the film captures that quite nicely, and then goes a little bit further and looks at, looks into things that, you know, perhaps would never have occurred to Bernie, and you know, there's elements of the film that, you know, probably definitely didn't happen.
Yeah. But it builds a very nice narrative all around it.
It does. It does. And it serves a purpose, I think.
So I think we'll move into spoilers.
But before we do, I think I would say that, you know, if you've listened this far, I would recommend seeing the film.
Yeah, definitely. Please go and find it.
Enjoyed the performances. I thought that, you know, Jackson and Kane's performances were, you know, fantastic. And I would definitely recommend catching it.
I would too. You know, it's not often that, you know, in this current, the way that cinema currently is, you know, you don't get a film that is, you know, top billing is two people in their late 80s, early 90s.
No, that's very true too.
So just from that, it's quite something. And the story that they weave, and that Ivory's written, is well worth your time. And, you know, go and support your local cinema, because God knows they need it.
Hello, I'm Al Murray, and you're listening to Fighting on Film, the world's number one war film podcast.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you've listened this far, if you're not going to go and see it in the cinema, or you just want to hear our thoughts, the Sword Beach flashbacks are incredibly strong. And I could have watched a movie of those alone.
Yeah.
They are so well done. You see the LCT inside of it, and Bernie talking to the chap who's asking him about what's it like. And Bernie says, it's a piece of piss. You'll be fine. You know, he's getting all worried about going onto the beach in the tank, in the Sherman, and then he's like, it's a piece of piss. Hands him a Player's Navy cut tin with his wife's, his girlfriend's picture. And it's like, look, there's a note on, there's an address on the back. Let her know how I get on, type thing. Write to her for me. And that's Bernie's internal struggle, is coming to terms with what happened to him on the LCT. And you see it in chunks, doesn't ever really hang on it very long. But the bits that you get are so well done, and seeing the beach from the ferry, when Bernie's on the ferry going over, and him looking, and then he flashes in his head to seeing Sword Beach as it was, very powerful. You know, yeah. I've chatted to friends who I know who are veterans and have flashbacks to things that happened to them in Helmand and Afghanistan and things like that, and they say it is flashes. It's little triggers, little moments that just get in your head just a little bit, almost like a bit of a dream thing. You just kind of flash there, flash back. So I thought that was very well done.
I agree. And it breaks the film up nicely. So essentially, yes, you follow Bernie as he travels to Normandy. You follow Bernie and their interactions with Adele and the other members of staff at the care home that they live in. And then we flash back to young Bernie and young Rini just before the invasion. And then there's those great sequences on the actual LCT. And it's important to, like, try to explain the elements of survivor guilt that we talked about earlier in the show are threefold. So yes, we have Scott O'Shin. So we have Victor O'Shin, who plays Scott, who's an Afghan veteran. and he has a little bit of survivor guilt because he came back. It goes into a little bit more depth and detail, but
yeah, and he's clearly suffering himself.
He is, yeah, he's hurting, and he's using alcohol as a crux. And then we've got Arthur, Bernie's friend, who is a former bomber pilot. I think he flew Halifax, did he say?
He said he towed a glider over for those chaps.
Yeah.
And then he went back and he bombed Khan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I give it that. Sorry to jump in, but I like the fact that the movie didn't shy away from what happened to Khan, because it could have easily just gone, oh, well, Khan was bombed. Like it was nothing, but they really went into how much Khan was bombed.
And yes, I think he says it was leveled.
Yeah, didn't shy away from it being controversial.
No, it didn't.
Because I know it was and still is.
Yeah, he feels guilt, not only for the bombing of Khan, but also for the fact that his brother, who had been shot down months before, was in Khan when it was bombed. And was killed in Khan. And he's never been back to Normandy in person to his brother's grave. And he has that, deep sense of guilt. And he's leaned on alcohol his entire life.
Yeah.
And he's an alcoholic. There's a great scene where John Stenning throws up. It's well handled. It's really
tragic comedy, that sequence, isn't it?
Yeah. And then there's the much more complex survivor guilt of Bernie and Reenie. And then I didn't actually mention the actor's name earlier in cast. It's Elliot Norman, who plays Douglas Bennett.
Yes.
And he shows Bernie a photograph of his girlfriend. And then Bernie subsequently sees Douglas's Sherman get hit by anti-tank fire or artillery fire. And it brews up on the beach. And Bernie watches through a pair of field glasses and he sees Douglas struggling to get out of the tank and then subsequently, dying.
Hit
and
again.
He carries that survivor guilt all the way through to the present day. There's a nice payoff of that when he visits him, at the cemetery, along with Arthur, who visits his brother. And that's a scene that probably we both have thoughts on, I think.
Yeah, like I love that scene because they're finally in a place where they can start reflecting and trying to work through it, having held it for 70 years. But it's maybe it's just the way the film was. It was very quickly cut between nursing home, Reenie and Bernie. It was about Reenie and Bernie, obviously. It's about their relationship, their life together. But the scene with Arthur and Bernie in the cemetery at Bayeux, I wanted them to hang on that a little bit longer because it was welling something inside of me. The room was getting a bit dusty, the eyes were getting a bit watery, must admit.
Kane in that scene is fantastic and he gives it his all. And it's just, it's not only, dialogue, but it's also the physical acting that he brings to that.
Yes.
And he brings a depth and a pathos to it that, at 90, you can bring to a role.
Yeah, exactly. But it just didn't hang
very touching enough. Scene, but it just moves away so quickly from it. I just wanted him to linger or to say something more.
But then maybe that's
and
enough.
Even worse
it?
With John Standing's character, Arthur,
you don't see him after that
scene,
really, do you?
That scene of him finding his brother's grave is so short for the lead up that it gets because he talks about the guilt of bombing Khan. He talks about his alcoholism and that he's always been that way and he's never been able to get away from it. And he's a coward for not going to see his brother's grave in France. And he's coming to the end of his life and he knows it. And he felt this was the last chance he would have to go and visit his brother's grave. And the weight that scene is given just by that previous scene of him explaining that story, you think, oh, there's going to be quite a moving scene when he does find his brother's grave. But it's
But then maybe that's...
That is one of my few criticisms of the film. Yeah. I would have liked a little bit more.
But then reflecting on it...
parts of that scene.
Reflecting on it, I think maybe... because the movie rattles through. It's an hour and a half, but it's very well paced. I'll give it that.
It is.
Perhaps they just didn't want to hang on it too much. Maybe there's a stylistic or a writing, technique or something where you don't hang on it. Because I could get why some could and some don't. Maybe it's just the way this one was written, the way this one was done. I can get why they cut away, but me personally, I'd love to have hung on it a little bit more.
Well, so would I, because, you know, it's the crux of the film. It is about that guilt. The setup for it had been such that you're like, oh.
Yeah, but then you do get the lovely scene at the end where, and I think it's the strongest, one of the strongest moments where Bernie finally comes home and he's gone through the media foray and the...
And he tells Renee all about Douglas.
And he finally tells her about it, and he's feeling all... survivory guilt, as we said, and how it's not fair and how he feels.
She talks about when he, came back, he had this weight that he never talked about, and she kept waiting for him to talk about it, and he never did.
Yeah, and it's the guilt of him saying that he'd be okay. It was a piece of piss, he'd be perfectly fine. And then, moments later, his tank gets brewed up. But then it's how Reenie comforts him. It's them as their relationship, and Jackson and Kane's chemistry in this scene, it really got to me of how you, it's the bad luck and the good luck speech that Jackson gives is so strong and so poignant, I think, to everyone. And no matter what you've gone through in anything, I think everyone can take something from this, is that, you've got to keep on trucking, essentially. That's kind of what I got from it. And Bernie has, and they both have. And then the ending of the film is almost... kind of how it starts, where it's just them and their relationship and them having been on the beach and having these lovely moments together. Bernie getting his own back on the bicyclist that cuts in for him at the start of the movie, cuts in and he's trying to get a cup of tea on the beach. And it kind of just ends with them just being together. And I think a cynic could be like, oh, it's cutesy. Oh, kind of how life is. You're with someone.
Yeah,
small moments, yeah.
Reenie, says that, we're simple, ordinary people, and we've lived,
Well, they weren't. They were both mayor.
I know.
Mayor of Hove.
Mayor and mayoress of Hove, yeah. So they lived a really full life of, a lot of public service. I think he was a councillor and stuff before he became mayor. But she says, we lived a simple life, but that doesn't matter because we lived every moment of it. And that's a nice, that's a good thing to take away from that scene.
It is.
I think
it really, really is.
And as we've said, those scenes with Kane and Jackson are, the best parts of the film, but there's some other interesting stuff that I wanted to touch on. There's the scene with the German veterans who are in the pub.
That's very
encounter. Bernie and Arthur. And in the production notes that we mentioned earlier, it notes that Kane turned the script down at first because he felt like he'd run his course and he'd retired almost at that point. And then he thought about it again. And that scene with the group of German soldiers was one that he kept coming back to.
Yeah.
Where they share a moment of mutual understanding.
That's
really
nice. And he
found that particularly moving.
Mm.
And that kind of convinced him to take on the part. And again, as you said earlier, it's not every day that someone of his age gets to be in a leading role again.
Yeah, exactly. And that seems lovely because from the trailer, I was worried that we were going to get this something different than what we got. You can never really judge a film from its trailer, but I was like, oh, is it going to be a... what's it going to be? But then that scene is very well done. Yeah, and Bernie realises that he needs to go and help Arthur, essentially, to help Arthur with go into Bayern Cemetery. And he talks to the German veterans, and it's through a translator. The American translator is there. And he gives him his ticket to the commemoration, saying, you should be there too. And I like that. And you could have gone, and I like how the film didn't hammer any messages or try and be heavy-handed in its reflecting of the past. These are just old men reflecting on a life lived, rather than going into the nuts and bolts of the whys and the whos and all you know you're in the Wehrmacht, so what does this mean about your character, yada yada yada. Like last week, how we mentioned about the good German myth, this movie isn't gonna delve into that because it's not about that. And I like how Ivory, the screenwriter, didn't force in anything else to sort of pull you away and pull you out of Bernie's journey, because that's all it is. And the themes of acceptance and reflection are very, very strong. And I think that's why I really did like it. I enjoyed it. There's a few bits for me that don't, as we said, cutting away from certain sequences very quickly. It's annoying.
That was my main critique, I think.
And there's some harsh grading at certain points. But that's just me. I mean, other people might not even notice it. But I remember being a bit like, oh, it's a bit of a strong lighting there on that sequence or something. But
I mean, it might look better on a big screen.
Actually, because we watched it on our laptops because of the screener.
Exactly. In terms of, you know, the supporting cast, I thought the casting of the young Greenian
fantastic,
and was really good. And just to mention,
but happily had a whole lot more.
I agree. They could have slipped a little bit more in there. You know, they're introduced in like a little swing dance sequence where they're at like a local dance, and then there's a really beautiful touching moment where Bernie takes Rini to see the golden hour, the holy hour. I think it was
holy hour.
Refers to us.
Yeah, that's what they called it.
You know, about 4 a.m. and they hark back to that at the end of the film where they're hand looking out the window watching.
That's why
the sunrise over the sea, which is lovely.
Why Rini gets up so early so she can watch it all the time.
Yeah,
because it's implied that they first made love during that hour in the woods. It's lovely, and I think that's lovely as well. That, you know, it is the little things, as you said. It's that's what's important, like in a relationship and life. When you get to that age, you clinging on to and holding the things.
It's interesting because in the production notes, Parker mentions that it was a little bit difficult casting people for that role. Because he encountered like a lot of actors that were essentially doing, either knowingly or unknowingly, doing almost imitations of Kane, especially in Jackson.
But that's not what you're doing. You're meant to be doing Bernie.
Exactly. And then when he found Fletcher and Marcus, he found actors that had that same sort of spirit rather than doing an imitation. That's what he says in the production notes. So they didn't imitate the actors' mannerisms, etc. It was more of a capturing the spirit. And one of the things about Jackson's performance is her spirit is indomitable, like throughout the whole film.
Oh yeah,
she has such a presence. It's portrayed. We've all met elderly people that are like that.
They have this real presence in the room.
It just came across really well on screen. It was a bit of a masterclass in terms of,
it's genuine. That's what it is. Like, I sometimes feel like that's just Glenda Jackson chatting. That's not Rini. Yeah. That's Glenda Jackson. Yeah. Well, it's not Glenda Jackson. It's Rini. She embodies that role, and then Kane embodies Jordan.
I know we've already talked about it, but the LCT scenes, I thought they really brought a bang to the book, because it's hard pressed. There isn't a budget to make big war movies in this country at the moment. But it's fascinating that we finally get a depiction of the British
Saul Beach
on a D-Day on Saul Beach.
Yeah.
And it's such a small little encapsulation within a much larger film. It's kind of like Atonement in that respect, actually, you know, with the evacuation scene. But they do it so well, and it could be bigger, it could be grander, it could be better. But for what they've, you know, what's available,
I loved it. For what it really works well. It was very good.
And as you mentioned, with what Paul, you know, the lengths he went to do some research, and the fact that he was a member of the Sherwood Rangers as well. Because you know they landed just before HR on D-Day, didn't they? They were right in the vanguard. So I really liked that inclusion and the
nice
attempted scale they got with the LCC.
Six Shermans as well on the show. you know, even if that's one of them CGI or whatever, but it's nice to see that many. and a nice little look at, there's a lovely bit where you, where the camera pans up a little bit as if it's like mimicking the buoyancy and the waves, and you see the rest of the fleet, and you see another landing craft tank and a landing craft going in as well. It shows the scale very briefly, but it shows the scale, and it's just enough, and I really like that.
I just wish we had a British film,
a full movie of it. Yeah,
D-Day. Yeah, but that'd be great. But yeah.
But anyway, there's one line that we wanted to say, and this is a bit of a spoiler, but it's Kane, and if it's one of Kane's last lines, it's so well delivered. There's a sequence near the end of the film where the Hellman veteran who'd been drinking,
Scott comes and apologizes for drinking,
and says, "Look, you're a big inspiration to me." Yada yada. But he says, "I don't want you. You know, I don't want your praise. I don't want your praise. I want you to get better, and get some help, because right now you're a fucking mess." Yeah. And the way that Kane delivers that, oh, it's just fantastic. You have to see that scene to really. I'm not doing it justice, but it's fantastic. So that was our thoughts on The Great Escaper. It's out on October 6th. Thanks again to British Pathé. Thanks again to Pathé UK for sending the screener to us. We really appreciate it. And do check it out when it's in cinemas. And join us again next week for another war movie review. Catch you again. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.